KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Controversy has erupted over what some view as anti-Semitic comments by Minnesota Representative Ilhan Omar. We'll discuss the controversy and the split among Democrats over the upcoming vote on a House resolution that would condemn anti-Semitism. Then at 10:30, NPR White House correspondent Scott Horsley joins us in the studio. He was in Vietnam for President Trump's summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. And we'll talk with him about the failure of the nuclear talks and reports that North Korea is already rebuilding a dismantled missile launch site. And we'll catch up on other news from the White House. It's coming up after the news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. House Democrats are expected to vote today on a resolution that would condemn anti-Semitism and anti-bigotry. The vote comes after comments by Representative Ilhan Omar last week at an event in a coffee shop in Washington, D.C.
I want to talk about the political influence in this country that says it is okay for people to push for allegiance to a foreign country.
Omar's comments, which some are calling anti-Semitic for questioning the allegiance of those who support Israel in Congress, come just weeks after the freshman Minnesota Democrat apologized for tweeting that support for Israel was all about Benjamin's baby. And this has become a very polarized debate. Some are saying it's just another lobby she's criticizing, like AIPAC, and Israel should not be above criticism. It should be like Silicon Valley, big lobby, or NRA. Wall Street, for that matter. But there were tweets that went out, which he has apologized for, that were considered to be very unacceptable. And after that, and after an apology, she went on to talk about not only the Benjamins, but also apparent allegiance to a foreign country, which has caused a real firestorm. We want to talk about this, and we want to get your thoughts about it. Let me welcome Anna Edgerton, who's joining us for this segment. She's actually a congressional reporter, and she's up on Capitol Hill. She works with Bloomberg, and good to have you with us. Welcome.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
I guess the place to begin is, where are we? And before we get to that, let's talk about San Francisco Representative Pelosi, the House Speaker, who was answering reporters' questions today. You were there, and I just want to have our listeners hear a cut. She stopped short of actually asking Ilhan Omar to apologize.
I don't think that that the Congresswoman is perhaps appreciate the full weight of how it's heard by other people, although I don't believe it was intended in any anti-Semitic way. But the fact is that that's how it was interpreted. We have to remove all doubt.
So are we seeing a real split between the younger, more progressive members of the party here and Congress or Leader Pelosi?
Yeah, this has become a very complicated issue for Pelosi, and it's one that she has not really handled very smoothly, and I think kind of underestimated the emotional response that it would get from some of her members. For people who really wanted to have a resolution that would condemn anti-Semitism and focus just on anti-Semitism, they say they were very hurt by Ilhan Omar's words. I spoke with Elliot Engel. He's the chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, on which Omar sits, and he himself is Jewish, and he said he was personally offended by what she said, understood it to be a suggestion that Jewish people can have a dual loyalty. On the other hand, there are other members, especially among the Congressional Black Caucus and some of Omar's freshman colleagues, that have said there are so many worse examples of bigotry in our political discourse right now. Singling out one member is a really dangerous precedent to set and really puts Omar herself at risk.
Well, she has, unfortunately and sadly enough, endured some pretty strong threats. There's even been talk about getting security for her. But she was not removed from the Foreign Affairs Committee. That was one of the things that many of those who were feeling opprobrious, her remarks were opprobrious, were in favor. At this point, what are they doing with the actual piece of legislation? I mean, they're condemning hatred per se, or they're leaving it as anti-Semitic? Where is it?
There is going to be a resolution voted on the House floor today, and the scope has been widened to include other kinds of bigotry, Islamophobia, white supremacy, all kinds of hatred, which some Jewish members have said weakens the power of actually doing a resolution, and others have said is necessary because there are so many things that should be called out in our political discourse currently that you can't just single out anti-Semitism. It was important for Democratic leaders to decide to do the vote today because they're trying to keep the focus on H.R. 1, which is their sweeping anti-corruption, election transparency package of bills that they want to put on the floor tomorrow. So the longer that this gets drawn out, the more damage it will do to the unity of the Democratic caucus.
Well, Bernie Sanders, who is Jewish, of course, came out in her defense. So, for that matter, did Kamala Harris, Senator of California, and Elizabeth Warren, Senator of Massachusetts, both Democrats. But the effect on the Democrats, I mean, there's a good deal of fighting that has taken place over this. And I think it's fairly safe to say the Republicans are already weaponizing it, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Republicans have kind of seized on this as a wedge issue within the Democratic Party. And you had members like Steve Scalise, the number three Republican, the minority whip, and Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader, at a press conference yesterday saying that this is unacceptable. Democrats need to do this before it, you know, there's harm done because of Omar's suggestive, what they allege was a, you know, kind of a dog whistle of anti-Semitism, which was actually kind of rich coming from these members because Kevin McCarthy himself is accused of tweeting suggestions that wealthy Jewish donors are behind kind of controlling the political system, which is, of course, a very offensive trope and something that should not be tolerated and was since deleted. But, you know, he also has examples of not necessarily behaving in the most accepting and forthright way.
Yeah, and I mentioned Bernie Sanders. There was a trope that many people felt was absolutely unacceptable on Sean Hannity's show, where he had a picture of Bernie Sanders and said the lifestyle of the rich and socialists, and there was a what looked like a Jewish star there, and a vault for that matter, with lots of money. I'm going to bring our listeners into this. You may want to respond. We'd like your thoughts. We're talking about a House resolution that would condemn anti-Semitism and now actually condemn hatred. But the comments that this has brought forward, Representative Ilhan Omar's comments with Bloomberg, we're talking with Bloomberg congressional reporter Anna Edgerton, and we welcome your involvement in the program. Let me tell you how you can become part of the program. You can call us now at our toll-free number. The number to call is 866-733-6786. Again, we welcome your thoughts, and you can join us at 866-733-6786. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website at kqed.org/forum and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Here's a tweet from Kathy who says she did nothing wrong by calling out poor policy. Nowhere does she come across as anti-Semitic. Another listener writes, please address the straw man argument that is being used here. This issue is not Representative Ilhan Omar's criticism of Israeli policies, rather the string of anti-Semitic tropes that seem to come up in her comments. Well, we'll get some more of your thoughts on this. And I can represent, I think, to some degree, the kind of polarization we're talking about. Brett Stevens had an article in the New York Times. He's Jewish. He says essentially that this is a strident criticism of Israel that shades into anti-Semitism. That is Omar's remarks. And he also says essentially that, well, where was the last gay parade in Ramallah? I'm just reading Stevens' remarks here. Or where were women's rights marches in Gaza or opposition press in Tehran? Where were Middle East concerns about where in the Middle East could you see an indictment by an attorney general of the prime minister on corruption charges as you do in Israel? On the other hand, we have Glenn Greenwald, who is also Jewish, writing about the Democratic rebuke as a fraud and wild distortion of the comments that she actually made, and saying that the real prejudice here is against her as a black Muslim woman. And she has condemned Saudi money influence, and she has essentially made other remarks that could be construed as not being, well, being against big lobbying money. So I'd like to hear our listeners weigh in here. Anna Edgerton with us, reporter for Bloomberg, and let's go right to your calls. We go start with you, Del. You're on. Morning.
Good morning. My question is, I don't understand why we're making it a religious issue when Israel as a country has been questioned many a times for their human rights. I mean, Palestinians have different roads. They have blockades that they have to go through. It's very obvious that there's a problem there. So why are they making it such a religious issue when, honestly, it's how they run their country? It's a governmental issue. In my view.
Yeah, well, in fact, those who are on the representative side say it's criticism of Israel. And as I've indicated, there are many Jewish people who have criticized particularly this government of Benjamin Netanyahu's. But Anna Edgerton, I'm not sure that this is really a matter of religion. The concern here is that there have been charges, and it's an old blood libel, that Jews are not loyal to their country and not patriotic and are more interested in a kind of dual loyalty.
If you think about it, when it comes to our race issues here, you know, people say, hey, if you're not, if you're, you know, Black Lives Matter is not patriotic. It kind of correlates. It doesn't seem like, it seems like an excuse instead of digging into the real problem of the situation.
Well, the progressive wing, the Black Caucus, have certainly challenged the criticism of Representative Omar. And again, we'll hear from more of our listeners and what you have to say. Here's Michael, who writes, why equate any sort of criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism? The fact that the American Israel Public Affairs Committee has a stranglehold on politicians who become dependent on its donations tells us enough about the phony claims of anti-Semitism. Here's a caller from Sonoma. Mark, join us. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm Jewish, and I consider myself progressive on most issues. I'm very troubled by the Congress member's comments, but I'm equally troubled by the tweet that was referenced earlier by House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, as well as President Trump's comments about the very fine people that were white supremacists in Charlottesville, as well as the campaign ad or tweet in 2016 that Trump had with a six-sided star, like the Star of David, Hillary Clinton, George Soros, and Janet Yellen, the chair of the Fed. So I really cannot stand the hypocrisy on the Republicans. I do want to say, though, as a political progressive who lives in the Bay Area, I have seen plenty of instances of anti-Semitism couched as criticism of Israel. I detest Netanyahu and his policies, but plenty of these people that I see comments on progressive websites like Crooks and Liars. Basically, what I want to say is that, unfortunately, I think the extreme right and the left have something in common in their hatred of Jews. The only difference is the right calls us Jews and the left calls us Zionists. And just one last thing. A number of years ago, I was driving down 19th Avenue by San Francisco State, and there was a demonstration against Israel. And I will never forget seeing a sign that had a Star of David, an equal sign, and a swastika. And I think that says it all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call. Well, Israel is a Jewish state, Ann Edgerton, and sometimes there's a good deal of confusion between what's anti-Zionism and what's anti-Semitic. Anna, do we have you? Our congressional reporter seems to have been lost to us, but we'll just continue taking your calls and hearing from you. And let's go next to we heard from David. I want to go next to another caller here. Let me read something that Ben writes first. This is Ben, who says, this is so obvious an attack job from within the Democratic Party to put the younger members in their place. Here's David. David, you're on.
Yes. Michael, my question is how in the world can you conflate Zionism and Judaism and call that speaking against the Jews?
Well, again, I think it's because it's a Jewish state. I mean, if you speak against, say, Italians, it's not a Catholic state, though it's mainly Catholics. If you speak against, any government that has a strong tie to a religion, it doesn't. The Irish, let's say, you're not against Irish Catholics, but it is a Jewish state.
It's a Zionist state. Guys under being Judaic. That's the hang-up.
Well, okay, you've said it and expressed that. I thank you for the call. There are a lot of wrinkles to this and a lot of nuances to this. It becomes difficult sometimes to sort through what's anti-Zionist and anti-Jewish, although there is a definite argument for the separation of the two. Stephanie says, wasting time on legislation about an attitude is absurd. We can't control every word spoken by congressional members, nor should we. We can respond appropriately to speech we disagree with and let the chips fall where they may. We'll go more calls. Julian joins us next. Julian, you're on.
Hi, I'm 25 years old. I'm Jewish American. I wanted to just share what I heard, like how it sounded to me, which was fine. the idea that, you know, for instance, Sheldon Adelson has significant influence in politics because of his money and his role financing campaigns. Like, if that's true, Sheldon Adelson is also a strong proponent of our current policies towards Israel and towards settlement. It's not a statement against Jews to be calling out Sheldon Adelson and the way that money buys him power in politics. And it also, the other part didn't really strike me as being anti-Semitic. It was, you know, I asked my mother, would you say you have some allegiance to Israel? And she said, yeah. And it was just totally casual, yes, because I think when you say allegiance, it's not mutually exclusive. I can have a, you know, dual citizenship for starters.
You can indeed be loving toward another country or, for that matter, toward the Vatican or whatever, and not necessarily be charged with or alleged to be not loyal to your own country. I think that's pretty clear, and I thank you for the call. And also pretty clear is the fact that Steve King kind of went 16 years with all kinds of white supremacy, and there wasn't much to do about it, but there's a lot about this. Anna, do we have you back here, Anna Edgerton?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. I think we just dropped, somehow your call dropped there. Is there distinctions up on the Hill between, well, Philip Roth made a distinction that was very important many years ago between Judaism and Jewishness. One is a religion, the other is an identity or an ethnicity, and also Zionism. Do you hear those kind of nuances from congressional representatives?
Yes, and every Democrat and actually every person, I think, has a different understanding of this and what it means, and also a different exposure to conversations with Jewish people to understand, you know, where they're coming from, how historical tropes can be hurtful in ways that people don't actually understand. Some of the first comments that Representative Omar said that were criticized as being anti-Semitic was she said that people have been hypnotized by Israel. Well, that is historically very hurtful to Jewish people. It has been used in the past to kind of encourage prejudice against Jewish people, and she said she didn't realize that at the time. When she questioned the money going to AIPAC, she said that she didn't quite, you know, she didn't mean to make a connection between Jewish people and being wealthy. Similarly here, she said she didn't mean to imply that Jewish people have a dual allegiance. She says she was just concerned about the expectation that she, as a representative and as an American, pledge her own allegiance to Israel. So what she says she was trying to do is really question what has become U.S. foreign policy orthodoxy, and that it is just taken as a given that Israel is a very close ally, and we shouldn't question that at all.
Yeah, in fact, Glenn Greenwald said that she never actually accused Jews of having allegiance to Israel, which was a part of the resolution condemning people who do that. But here's another point of view from a listener named Tom, who said we keep talking about history and tropes and how they can come in and hurt and really disgust people. Ilhan Omar's talk about allegiance to a foreign nation, Tom writes, reminded me of Executive Order 9066, Franklin Delano Roosevelt's order that imprisoned 120,000 Japanese Americans, including my parents' families. Omar's remarks have no place in the Democratic Party. Let me get another caller on here, and that's you, Alex. You're on.
Hi, everybody. I just wanted to say that as you know, a 35-year-old guy with Jewish family members who watched South Park here and there, like a lot of my generation growing up. There's a lot of blatant casual anti-Semitism in that show, and I think people in our generation genuinely don't see people pulling punches when it comes to that stuff. So when you hear things like, oh, you meant this by saying this, and the word hypnotized and all these things that people talk about ancient tropes in history, we see things as incredibly blatant, like the tweets that, you know, Republican congressmen send or the memes that the president sends out and stuff like that. So I think people really mean what they say, and younger people are like just a little bit confused by people looking for things that aren't there when the stuff has been there for a really long time.
Thank you for that statement, Alex. It's good to hear from you. You know, I don't necessarily bring Grant Greenwald into this again, but he did point out, and I'd like your response, Ann Edgerton, to this. He said when Bibi Netanyahu spoke before Congress, Tom Friedman, who is Jewish, said the allowing of him to speak in front of the House of Representatives was bought and paid for by the Israeli lobby. What's the difference, Greenwald says?
Yeah, and there's also an interesting examination of how AIPAC has kind of related to the different parties differently. And there was a very controversial speech by President Trump in 2016 when he was still a candidate and went to speak at the AIPAC policy conference, and he criticized President Obama, the sitting president, at this conference, and people cheered. People clapped and were very receptive to his message. AIPAC, the organization, later sent out a statement saying that they did not agree with Trump, the candidate's speech, and did not agree with those who applauded and cheered. So there is, and when Benjamin Netanyahu came to speak in Congress, it was at the invitation of the Republican-led Congress, not the President of the United States, as you would usually expect between two heads of state.
There's also, and I wonder if you hear this up on the Hill, Anna Edgerton, there's also been a lot of criticism from defenders of Israel and defenders of Zionism, that there's all too much pointing of fingers from the left against Zionists and against Israel, when there isn't, as far as human rights violations that are severe in other countries. Obviously, the Saudi Arabians in Yemen, but also in Iran and the Congo and so forth, pretty egregious and horrible human rights violations, but often the left singles out Israel.
And that's one thing we see in a lot of our foreign policy discussions right now. When you look at policy towards Venezuela, for example, and how the president, the Trump administration, has taken a very strong stance against Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela, but has not taken a similarly strong stance against Duterte in the Philippines, for example, or other leaders who are accused of committing human rights abuses.
That's a good example, I mean, of how human rights abuses seem to go in the directions people want them to go. Yeah.
Exactly. And when we get into a foreign policy discussion, it is dangerous to kind of get into a whataboutism, because then you can say, well, Israel's treatment of some of its citizens, it may be bad, but this other country does it worse, which may be true, but doesn't necessarily change how you would evaluate the structure on the ground in any given country.
I'm going to go to another caller, and that is it. Zoe or Zoe?
Zoe.
Zoe, welcome.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I just want to point out, without addressing the substance of what the representative actually said, just the fact that she drew attention to Israel in the first place as a topic in the face of everything else happening in this country and in the world, Venezuela, Syria, oppression everywhere, including, the Middle East, and the fact that she raises Israel and flags it as something she feels the need to tweet about, I think is indicative of something in the society generally, that a lot of people bring this issue up and is indicative of anti-Semitism.
Zoe, I thank you for that. Another listener writes, criticizing Israel's policies in Palestine has nothing to do with Judaism. All nations have the right to criticize, and I would add, have the right to criticize your own nation, too, and hope that that will indeed be the spirit of things. But we will continue to monitor this and follow it as best we can. Thank you, Anna Edgerton. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Appreciate your being with us. And also, stay tuned, because we're going to have Scott Horsley joining us, White House correspondent for NPR News, when we return on Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.